Well, today I have on the Trinity Podcast my good friend, my colleague. He is Dr. Joe Alotta. He is a fellow alumni from the class of 2006, and he is also the lead pastor of Essential Church in New Bergen. And he has gone on and done very well for himself in the education realm, and he is our campus pastor. He oversees our chapels here on campus and ministries. He just came back from Chicago because he is the person in our honors program. He's not the director of our honors program, but he is part of the honors program as far as he does the logistics for when we go on trips. He is the logistics guy, and probably 10 more jobs on this campus we wanted to talk about. But he just came back from Chicago. My good friend, Dr. Joe Alotta, thank you for being here today.
Great to be here. Still a little tired from a busy week, but yeah, we had a great, great trip.
That's awesome. I know you're the director of the ministry degree programs here.
Yes.
So whether you're in day program, online, or Quest, you are the director of those programs.
Yep. I can't think of a better job than to get to train future ministers, whether pastors, youth pastors, missionaries, worship leaders, or anything in between, on getting to train them for whatever God has for them for their future.
You know, I love your story because you just came here as a young person, didn't know anything, right? I mean, came from Christian school, right?
Yeah, I came from Christian school, so yeah, it depends what you define as nothing. I don't think I knew anything, but maybe compared to other kids that, you know, didn't at least have a background in church or Christian school,
as we
maybe
like to
I would say it's above the rest, but I don't know.
Yeah, as an old person, I like to say, you were a young whippersnapper. Yeah. But but you came here really, you know, we're out of Christian school and went to college.
And learned a ton. I mean, that's just what Trinity was 20 years ago is still what Trinity is today. And I would assume it was 80 years ago, 90 years ago, is, man, they train you to learn the Bible. They train you how to study the Bible. They train you information about the Bible, how to apply the Bible, how to live out the Bible, how to communicate the Bible.
Now, you and I both have something. We both say the same thing. I didn't learn anything when I went to my master's program. Because I already learned it in undergraduate.
Yeah, I learned it here.
I took hermeneutics and Survey of Theology 1 and all these things that I took, you know, when I was a student. And when I got to my graduate program, it was a no factor. I did not struggle with, like, what are they talking about? That never happened to me. I knew exactly. In fact, when it came to apologetics, the graduate program I was in used the same book we use.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny.
I can tell you, I take some of the books I really like from seminary and use them in my undergrads.
So
stuff.
So that, you know, it's our unique value proposition, I think, is that students have access to your brain and your knowledge and your passion for, you know, raising up the next generation. And we should all be gospel ministers, even if we're, you know, accountants or plumbers. We should still be gospel ministers first, and you definitely equip them for that. Now, I do know that you're also a Star Wars freak. We have to bring that up.
I like all things movies. Star Wars is within that realm. I don't feel like I love comic book stuff, and I love Star Wars stuff. I love all that stuff, but I do love Star Wars.
So basically, you're just a teenager in an older guy's body.
I got enough education to be able to speak about some of these things like Star Wars or Marvel, and I can speak about it on an academic level.
That's good.
Really,
that's good.
I just like them.
I still think that, you know, that's good. It's so good. Well, you know, and as far as, like, if a student wants to become a youth pastor, which is what happens a lot, they come to the school, I want to be a youth pastor, because they grew up in a youth group, and they're like, I want to be cool like my youth pastor. You know, he has a cute wife and awesome kids, and he's got a cool job, and they don't realize how much work it is, but they want to become a youth pastor. And you get those guys that come and people that come here for that quite often. And strangely enough, is there a job market for these guys?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, that's there's no shortage. I mean, there are a great number of jobs that are opening. When it comes to something like youth ministry is what I say. If you have a very narrow goal of, like, I want to be a youth pastor, then, and if you want to be a high school pastor, or, oh, I want to be in a small church, but that's overall, whatever it is you want to do, if you have a very specific job title, then I say, hey, just be a little broad on where you're willing to minister at. Be willing to say, oh, I don't have to be a youth pastor in Tampa, I'm willing to be, oh, I'll move to Georgia, I'll move to Tennessee, I'll move to Texas. Be willing to be flexible on where you do it. If God, you feel very called to the Tampa Bay area, let's say, then you need to be a little flexible on exactly what you're doing. Like, I kind of want to do more youth stuff, but, oh, here's a job that does youth and children, but it's right in the area I want, then great. So I say be flexible in one of two areas, and you'll have no trouble getting a ministry job. Be either flexible in where you want to minister, or be flexible in what your job title is as you minister. And if you're flexible in one of those two areas, yeah, you're going to get a job. There's jobs out there.
I was working on the Department of Labor Statistics and what jobs for ministerial there were, and I was a little worried when I started working on that to add to the website. I was like, oh, I hope we can find... I found out the job market's wide open, and that we're not training enough people. And then it dawned on me, there's literally a church in every corner in North America.
Yeah.
So imagine if you had, if you're training to be a plumber, and it was a plumbing store in every corner in North America. Yeah. There'd be a job for you. There'd be a job for you. And it dawned on me, we're just not training people to...
There are churches closing, but churches are being planted at a faster rate than they're closing. Okay, number one. So there's new opportunities coming up, and guess what? It's pretty early on that they're like, we need someone ministering to our youth. You know, so there new churches are being planted, and there are a lot of the big churches, all right, there are still around. Yeah, during post-pandemic, we are seeing a shrinking of kind of some of those mega churches. That's one of the things we talked about on this Chicago trip, that we met some of these, like maybe churches you've actually heard of in name. They deal with some scandals, and they've dealt with the pandemic, but like Willow Creek, Harvest Bible Church. I mean, these are churches that were well over 10,000, and they're seeing a shrinkage. But if you actually look, they're not compromising in the area of the number of pastors they're having. They may be losing some support staff. They're losing some other kind of things on the periphery. But at the end of the day, whether you have 800 kids in a youth group or 600 kids in a youth group, that doesn't affect the need of a youth pastor. So right. And the staff that it takes to minister to that many youth, there's multiple youth pastors in a church that size. But the jobs are still there. We're not seeing a total disappearing job. There is a little bit of a shift, like specifically for youth ministry. We are seeing a little bit of a shift that we're seeing more go bivocational. So we are seeing a little bit of a trend towards, if you are just a youth pastor, you're not doing other things. I've always, you know, encouraged, like, hey, be value added. Oh, I'd love to do youth and worship is obviously the biggest
obvious
one.
Yeah.
That's a guaranteed job wherever you want. If you can do youth and worship, I can guarantee you a job tomorrow. I can guarantee you a job yesterday. They've already called. I just need to fill the spot.
Oh, you need both. I get those calls. That's my most call I get from a church. Hi, I'm Pastor so-and-so. Do you have anybody who can lead worship? Yeah. And we need a youth pastor. That's like a weekly call for me.
That's a weekly call, for sure. So that's an easy one. But there are other things that you can just kind of market yourself and think, yep, I can do the youth, but you know what? I can also run your small group ministry. I've done that training. Ooh, I can also help oversee missions. That's, again, like you talked about, like, what do I do at Trinity? Like, yeah, I lead the ministry department, but hey, I also lead chapel and I help lead logistics on different trips, and mission trips and honors trips. So now it's like, great, I'm able to have this full-time job because I can do a couple different things, and I'm able to do it at one place. But we are seeing a little bit of a shift towards, and I do prep if God's calling you to youth ministry, hey, you might choose to be a part of a church plant that can't afford you full-time right now, but you can kind of do something on the side. They'll pay you part-time, and then as the church grows, then you will become full-time. And you're getting that experience. Now you're not walking in of like, oh, I've gone to college with no experience. Hey, I've got my 3 years, 3 to 5 years, and then when the job opens up that, a good job that a lot of people are applying for, you're coming in with a degree in youth ministry or just biblical education in some way, and you're coming in with that 3 to 5 years experience with the people that are going to give you a great reference, and they're not upset at you. They understand, like, oh, this is a great opportunity for you.
There's a progress there.
You get that. And, yeah, so I do want to prep that there are situations in which, hey, if you want to be right here and you have the exact church you want to be in or the right area you want to be in, you might be ready to be bivocational for a couple of years. That might be something you end up doing, and hopefully you can still do something in ministry realm, but it could be a great value to say, I am going to get kind of a job that I can minister to in the secular world, quote unquote, with secular, how we define that. But I purposely want to do that. I had one of my students a couple of years ago had a full-time youth pastor job, missed his time at Starbucks so much because he felt like this was the one time I actually had an opportunity to share the gospel with non-believers. He loved the relationship, and so when there was some opportunity to move around a little bit, he took a part-time youth pastor job and a full-time Starbucks job. And that's actually what he wanted. He had an opportunity to be full-time youth, but he liked that. I want this. God's definitely called me to minister in this way, but God's definitely called me to minister to the unbeliever in this way. And he's able to do the ministry he wants the way he wants and get funding from those billionaires at Starbucks. And well, he's happy.
Fantastic coffee.
Yeah.
I actually identify with that because, you know, I do real estate, and I just have a client because I have, you know, this, I went to seminary. I'm a seminary graduate, and I had a client recently who had a loved one pass away, and they had no one to do the funeral. In fact, I've done two funerals as a person that they don't see me as a pastor. They see me as the realtor, right? Yeah. This is a gig I've been doing for 20 years. And, I mean, I only do listings, you know, because I work here. But the thing of it is, it gave me an opportunity to do the funeral, you know, the service. And I was able to share the gospel and minister to them that, in a way, because it was, like, less threatening to them, maybe. And it's just an opportunity. I find I have great opportunity to witness to people and do real ministry that I never would have thought I could ever do doing that. But, of course, if you're working at a Bible college, you're doing ministry every day.
Yeah. And this works the other way, too, the other side. So, yeah, I love kind of how, hey, I had this job in kind of a secular field, and then people saw, like, wow, you can help me in this very spiritual way. And
yeah, I've
heard
great.
Other stories like that. On the flip side, there was one of my youth pastor graduates some things happened in the church. He kind of needed a transition. He still was ministering as a youth pastor, just kind of unpaid, and he needed a job in the short term. And he, as he started interviewing at some places, he got an opportunity to be a social worker. And when they interviewed him and they heard, like, well, tell us, like, what you studied. And as he talked about it, they're like, yeah, actually, these are the soft skills we're looking for. We need somebody to care about people. We need somebody that is, you know, going to be compassionate. And so he wasn't even thinking about something in social work. But right when these secular people kind of heard what he'd been doing as a youth pastor and heard what he'd been studying, they used this term. This is kind of a common word out there now. Soft skills. We don't think about that. We are training soft. We're training people skills. And these people skills are usable in many different settings, in many different companies.
Sure.
I shared an article with one of the ladies that works here in the general studies department, showing how even Google and their teams are hiring people with kind of more liberal arts degrees, not tech degrees, because they said if you have everybody all tech in the room, they can kind of talk past the user. And so on these teams, they put people that are really good communicators, English majors, communication majors, things I can imagine, ministry majors, let's get them into Google. And they're finding that, like, they actually help the user end experience. And they're like, nobody's going to care that it does that. They don't care what the user end looks like and feels like. And so on all their teams, they've been putting these people with soft skills that learn to communicate, and they actually help the team communicate better. When you got all these type A tech people, like, speaking over each other, you need someone that says, hey, guys, we're talking past each other. Hey, let's communicate. And they're finding that ministry-minded people, if they're not using that term, they're using the term, you know, soft skills, people skills, are actually high-level teams communicate better.
That's an interesting point you bring up. You know, but I didn't really think about that terminology, soft skills. Yeah, I really think that's interesting because that explains a lot, though, because even some of the jobs that I've had, you know, post going to school, I didn't think that would be something I would want to do, but I ended up doing some things that, you know, I work at a Christian rehab called Teen Challenge for several years, and as a counselor. But I was a Bible teacher, you know, but it wasn't a licensed counselor, but, you know, we call them counselors in a rehab. And, you know, and really, you had to have a lot of other skills in order to do that job. It wasn't just about you'll be able to preach. That's like one small aspect of it. But I know you have your guys trained in girls. You had a student go, you guys went to Africa. So tell us a little bit about that, because you took a mission trip to Africa during COVID. Like, how did you pull that one off?
Yeah, it was a challenge. So the trip was initially
planned. It wasn't for honors. It was your other group.
That was a mission trip. Yeah, so that was a couple of years ago. So right when the pandemic hit, it feels like all time is running together. What was that, 2020? Am I right on that?
Yeah,
so we had been working with another ministry in the area about going and helping them run a youth camp in South Africa. in May of 2020.
Was that Word of Life South Africa?
It was Word of Life South Africa.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So Word of Life South Africa, they'd kind of reached out that particular year, it didn't have anything to do with the pandemic yet, that all their kind of teams were being used in Al's Place, and they were used to getting a couple teams from Word of Life, but man, they do a lot of great ministry, and they kind of, I think, overcommitted a little bit.
Yeah, the director of the Florida one is a graduate trainer.
Yeah, graduate trainer. And so they kind of had all their teams planned out late spring or early spring of, yeah, we're kind of booked out everywhere. And so Word of Life South Africa is sitting there like, uh-oh, we could use a team to help. And they reached out. Someone I had met in the past and said, like, hey, do you think you got some students that could help us run a summer camp? And I was like, I think maybe we might. And reached out. And several students were like, yep, I'd love to be a part. That's kind of how mission trips kind of work around here. I hear a need from a missionary. They kind of state some kind of, we could use some students. Then I throw it out. The students, when it connects, great. I'm going to help organize that.
Organically, that happens.
Yeah. I'm always trying to just read the room. Like, what are the students interested in doing? What do they want? Where do they want to go? What are they passionate about? And when I share, and I'll usually have, like, missionary, make me a little video, tell me what you need. And now I want to see if it connects. And it's, again, that's the challenge of the Christian world. There's so many great things going on all over the world. You could do anything anywhere.
Yeah, and so we had a Christian rap artist come through here. I mean, KB, right? I mean, who would have think that?
Man, we got battle rappers coming out of here. I mean, like,
it's hilarious.
So we got a lot of, you can do anything anywhere for the kingdom of God. And so I'm looking for, all right, where are my present students? How do they want to minister? How do they want to? I'm going to stretch them in some other ways. So I reached out, and they were in. And so, well, pandemic hit. Okay, well, we can't travel anymore. Nothing's happening. And there was a little tiny, tiny window in late November of that same year that we got the news that South Africa was opening their doors. And they literally stayed open for about 6 weeks before they closed down again. If you can remember, I know it seems like ancient history, but just after that, in January of 2021, we started hearing about Omicron coming out of South Africa. And so they closed down again. But we were there in December for about 10 days where they opened up. The school said, okay. And America was going to let us out. South Africa was going to let us in. And, you know, they're Southern Hemisphere, so it was flipped. So we were actually doing a summer camp for them because summer is December for them. So they were on their school break for summertime. And so we did a summer camp for them and went down to this church. And man, just been a great ministry. Again, running what you would think of as just a week of camp. There was games and worship and preaching, and all of our students that we brought all got to participate because we lost some students, so I had to bring five down with me. And pandemic time, and every one of them sang, preached, led games, led small groups. They got as involved as they wanted to. They were thankful.
Didn't one go back or is going back?
So they went back. So, yeah, that's my, you know, I have my little behind-the-scenes goals I always have on mission trips is I want students to see. I want to stretch them, you know, and I know they'll be stretched. And put them into some things that, like, okay, this isn't what I naturally want to do, but I can be prepared and I can do it. But secretly, I want them to see, like, hey, the way that God gifted you, the skills you have, what you've learned, you can do this overseas, guys. You can do this in other countries.
Sure.
And I want them, right when they see, like, I can do this. And so my kind of secret goal and hope is I want all my students, I want every single student at Trinity to go on at least one mission trip in their 4 years. That's one of my goals that I have. I want every student that's here 4 years, so not every student that's here.
Well, you just went to 4 years. You just went to Mexico.
So with Mexico, we had Mexico and Pakistan. So we had a couple students go to
Pakistan. Yeah, so that was interesting.
Yeah, I'll give a little bit of that. So, but the answer to the one question you had, yeah, I had one of my students that loved South Africa so much that she wanted to go back and do her internship as a counseling internship. So she came to do counseling for the workers there at Word of Life. So they have, you know, student workers and other things like that. And so she came to do their counseling internship.
So we have an internship in South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, our little Bible college here is like, our small little Bible college has a huge gospel footprint
in
the world.
And it's because we can tailor it to the individual. When an individual says, hey, I'd like to do my internship in South Africa, the answer isn't, well, we don't have an internship in South Africa. The answer is, okay, can we get someone that can supervise you there? There is, great, let's talk. We can individualize that education because the counseling professor and one of the missionary ladies that had a degree in counseling that was there on site in South Africa talked and said, you can supervise, great, she can go and do it. So we can tailor individual education here at Trinity. No way a big university would never even try. The backlog on that would be 3 years long. We could do it in an afternoon on a phone call.
Well, that's one thing about Trinity is that we have such a, 90 years, right? We have connections with so many ministries. Yeah. And,
the sun does not set on Trinity College graduates.
No, it really doesn't. And I've been always kind of surprised at some of the people, what they've done over the years. Yeah. I met some people recently that were pretty elderly now. They were back in the 50s here, and they brought the Jesus film to Russia and China. Yeah. Like, that's pretty significant, cool. So, all right. Now, you just want to you take some students to Mexico.
Yeah. So kind of how this story went down is, as I said, I try to support the students. And this has been the first year, even Joe was a little like, okay. We had some students. We have a student here from Pakistan doing a great ministry. His name is Haroon. He's doing a great ministry called the Pakistani Theology Project. Every Saturday morning, he is on a Zoom-like call.
In this studio.
Yep, in this studio right here. Is on a Zoom call with his church back in Pakistan, teaching theology to those students live. Yeah, they interact. They ask questions.
I've done it.
I've taught a class. We've had a lot of our professors teach classes. He teaches a lot of them, and what it's grown into 70 plus people, not just from his church, but 70 plus people from the community coming to get theology classes. We've now opened up a second site there in Pakistan doing the same thing. So now it's going to be a three-way screen where he's teaching people, taking questions. It's a really great ministry. Well, they had some needs for like, hey, we want you to come. We're going to do a revival. We want to help get the second site up. So Haroon is saying, can we take a team of people? And I said, well, yeah, I guess. Let's see how many people are interested. I didn't know if we'd have people interested in going to Pakistan, all right, to do a mission trip. We had interest. 12 students had signed up to go to Pakistan to do, teaching and preaching and revival and, helping them get some, do some VBS stuff. And so I was blown away. It was amazing. It was incredible. But for the first time ever, I actually ran into visa problems. About half the team got denied a visa to get into Pakistan. And then a couple of people that got approved of the visa hadn't gotten the COVID shot. And they required it like literally weeks before we left for the trip. So now all students had to be vaccinated and they had to get a visa. And they were arbitrarily, seemingly, approving some people and denying others. I can't tell the difference of why you approve some. Obviously God knows.
Pakistan isn't exactly open to the gospel.
Yeah. So the governmentally, they view themselves as, free in the sense of you can be a Christian in Pakistan, you can be a Christian missionary in Pakistan, but they're going to care where you're going and what you're doing. So the area we were in is literally like a Christian city. We would think of it as a little tiny town. But it is, and there are Muslims who live there, but it is kind of seen as the safe area for Christians. If you get saved in one of the other regions, you're going to probably want to move to this region and be able to actually have some community. And so we were going there. We were being very honest and, we don't want to do anything, get in trouble with any kind of State Department. So we answer very honestly, what are we doing, this and that. And again, several people got approved and several didn't. Long story short, I'm left with myself who was denied and several other students who were denied trying to figure out, okay, well, do we do an alternative mission trip? And in about a 10-day turnaround, I called out some of the missionary friends that we have and just said, hey, I got a small team of people. They got sermons ready. We got VBS stuff ready. Who's ready for us in a week? I would never say I think I could plan a mission trip in a week. And I still don't think I would say that, but God provided in this instance that there was several people reached out, yes, and we ended up listening to different pastors and missionaries kind of share with why they wanted us to come, and we went to this great ministry in Nogales. They call themselves the Dream Center of Nogales, Mexico.
Oh, that's cool.
And there is like a dream center in LA that a lot of people, it's kind of famous, and they homeless ministry kind of things. They're not officially associated with them, but they've done training there and they asked to use the name and they were given permission.
Sure.
But great ministry. Essentially, it started as this guy in Arizona that just started welcoming homeless guys into his house. And once he filled his house, there was a homeless ministry in Arizona, Phoenix, that says, hey, come and work for us. and you can minister to the homeless people here. We got 80 beds. He's like, I can fit more than it's in my house. So he took like the 7 or 8 guys that were staying in his house, brought them over there, and he worked there for several years. And then he looks and he says, you know, more than there's a need in Phoenix, there's a need across the border. There's a lot of homeless. So here's a guy, he was of Mexican descent, but he's a U.S. citizen, lived in America his whole life, leaves the United States to move to Mexico to open up this homeless ministry in just across the border. Nogales is a just across the border city that goes right into kind of just south of Santa Fe.
Sure.
And so he goes across the border and buys this piece of land. It's on top of a mountain. It's on the edge of the city. And homeless men, sort of just homeless men, hey, come here. You can stay here 3 days, no questions asked. You need food, shelter, we got you. At the end of the 3 days, it's either like, great, you got a shower, you got a couple nights sleep, you got some clothes, have a good one, let us know if we can help you in the future. But what they say is, how about you do this? How about you stick around for 6 months and go through some intense discipleship? All right, they wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do their devotions, have team devotions. They have every evening, they have kind of like you would think like a church service, chapel service. They eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner together. During the day, they're working on the property, usually construction stuff, but some do some other things as well. But they're building the next set of dorms for more people. They're building a new chapel for more people. And so they are working in for 6 months. At the end of that 6 months, they can either say, yep, here's your certificate, congratulations, really proud of you. They've done some job training things for them. They go, all right, let's go get you, help you get a job. But then they can choose to do another 6 months and do pastoral training. And they just said, we'll train you to be a pastor. All right, we'll train you to be a minister. And so from that, they have quite a few guys, maybe about 12, that they're full-time there now. They work there. They're not even getting paid. Not in the traditional way. They have a place to stay. They have food to eat. They get clothing, all the kind of like the things that we look at what God promises you in his word, seek first the kingdom of God. And like, look at the lilies of the field. They get taken care of. Look at the birds. They get taken care of. How much more does God care for you? So they got a place to stay. They got food to eat. They got clothing. And they work years. Some of these guys have worked there for years. You know, they're doing drug rehab and all the things that come along with homeless ministry.
Well, that's 90% of it, right?
And so then things began to fit. So now sometimes some of these, they have wives. What do we do with them? What do we do? We have women that are, what do we do with them? So then they build a whole new wing with women and children. So now they have an area. Now they have about a dozen children. During the pandemic, they had to educate them. That was the rule. Now they're this, now they're this place where what we would think of as RCPS. They have their own little acronym. Kids that have run away, kids that have lost family, they get brought to them and they kind of foster care. And they're kind of running, think of it as like an orphanage, but they're not doing it as long-term. They're hoping that, family can either get out of jail or whatever's needed to get them back. But now they got schools operating out of there, and they are just, you can just see how each ministry was, all right, well, this ministry is what's got to come next so that we can meet this need and this need. They got now 40-some people there being ministered to, and our students went down there, and we preached every night in the service. One of my students spoke fluent Spanish and was able to share. And just to where maybe this person felt that my Spanish has nothing to do with my ministry. Like, I just happen to speak Spanish. I grew up in a Spanish household. I come to Trinity, I'm learning the Bible, Jim, speak Spanish here. All of a sudden, it's like, if you could just speak Spanish, that's way easier. And doesn't need a translator. Communicates right away. Everyone is like enamored by like, wow, they're learning so much. I have to stand up there and I have to speak twice as long because I got to be translated. and so like to see a student like, so this is a part of my ministry. Yes. To see the students I can serve in this way. They all want to go back. They're all wanting the support. It was because we went and, paid them to be able to stay there with them. We stayed right with everybody. Our ladies were on the ladies and children's side. The guys were on the guy side. And we did that little dorm room. Like, it just looked like a little motel. It looked like a rundown motel, I guess is what you'd think of. Kind of just cement floors. Work. Bed was comfortable. And but one of the things we did is, like, all the kids, and then we went to a, it was like a pool. And it cost, like, 2 pesos to go to the pool. But when you think about taking all those kids and all of people, you know, they don't do that regularly. They only do that when teams visit. And so what are the, as we were talking about, how do we keep supporting them? It's just like, hey, maybe we like, and maybe if you come by Trinity, you might see this. You're going to see like a little can out by the coffee. We always have free coffee here. I said, but we're going to stick a little can out by the coffee and says, if you can put a couple bucks in there occasionally, we're going to use that money to go back to make sure those kids can go swimming once a month. And so 2 pesos, you know, so it's like 20 cents for us. So I can get every kid to go swimming for 20 cents a month. If you'd like to sponsor a kid to go swimming, 20 cents a month, can send that kid to go swimming and give them a great time. So it's just little stuff like that that you see all of a sudden, like it clicks, like, man, we are so privileged here in America. Oh, we have so many blessings, and something so small to us could be like make their day. What can I do to make their day then? It's just little things. We're going to send them supplies.
I love that the students went. I know some of the students that went personally, and I can tell that there was an impact in their lives. Oh, yeah. You know, talking for 5 minutes and now this. And then the light came on.
Yeah.
Suddenly my first world problems here really aren't that big of a deal. And, you know, like they got my latte wrong at, you know, Starbucks drive through, whatever. Oh, that never happens. But that's fantastic. Now, this is like, you know, we're in June. Yeah. You know, so I know that Harun went to Pakistan.
Yep.
And he did minister there. Yep. And he did all of that while they were there.
And a couple of us, we ended up doing our sermons that we had, like, for this revival meeting with several hundred. There was a revival meeting with several hundred men, and then a different one with several hundred women. So we still just preached from the United States. They wanted us to. We were like, Harun can handle this, and the people going, yeah. But they're like, we want you. We want these professors from the college. Like, we want this.
There's a real need. From my understanding is there's a real need there because there's a lot of false teachers and not so good people exploiting the gospel, I guess.
And you see that. You see in many of those kind of countries that were like, you know, they don't have an option to get more education. Their education is either going to have to be self-led, you know, or resource, but imagine like searching the internet and saying like good Bible teaching. Who knows where you're going to land? Who knows where you're going to land?
Well, the VPNs, they get blocked a lot of that.
Anyway. Yeah, some of that can be blocked. But imagine like, you know, the value of, you know, someplace like Trinity, and you can kind of look at the doctoral statement, and we have this history of who we are, and you can then know people who have gone here.
Yeah, like now, Billy Graham.
Yeah. And now you can say, like, okay, I can trust what they say. But that is the challenge that we have on the internet today is not lack of information. It's lack of discerning that information.
Yeah.
So it's when people say, like, hey, can I get this degree online? Yeah. Well, all the information that we teach here at Trinity is you can find online somewhere, for sure. The difference is, do you have the capability of pulling up a website and knowing if this is true and accurate teaching or not? It's going to say it's 100% true at the top. It's going to say, oh, proven by the Evangelical Association of Americans. Is that a good organization? I don't know. I made it up, so I don't know. Like, discerning the truth is the challenge. So we're going to give you that foundation that's going to help you then, okay, now I can study the Bible for myself, and when I'm like, okay, what's the Greek word here? I'm looking at this website. Oh, yep, that fits in. Oh, yes, this is a good organization. Yes, this is a good Bible teacher. Yes, it's endorsed by someone I would agree with. And so now I have more tools to discern that website
and be able to
identify that truth.
We have, you know, you're saying that. I remember that verse, and it says, in the later days, the knowledge would greatly increase, but people would not come to a knowledge of the truth. And that verse, that you know, end times verse, is very clear today. I think it's like how many exabytes of information are created every day, and yet people don't even know what bathroom to use. I mean, let's be honest, that's a little crazy. It's very, so how do we reach those people? And we better have, you know, the right doctrine.
And really what it is, it's what we call confirmation bias. So if you believe, I'm going to come up with something really crazy. Like, you actually believe that, you know, Jesus wasn't real at all. Like, he was a figment of everybody's imagination, and it was group hysteria.
The great illusion, right?
Yeah, great illusion. Could you find a website that confirms that? Yeah, sure.
You can, yeah, absolutely.
So flat what earth. Happens, the danger is whatever you believe, you can find the confirmation website that proves what you believe, and now you're right. So we're not actually searching the internet for actual information. We're searching for the information that we already agree with. And so when it comes to the Bible, if you had a poor teacher, someone teach something really charismatic and entertaining and really engaging, it's easy to believe that. And then you can like look it up later. Oh, well, yeah, there's other people believe this. And that's, again, many, many areas that it happens in third world countries and happens in America. So it's not like it only happens there, but less, yeah, when you live in a little town and you have a lot less options in little towns in Pakistan of going to a quote-unquote good church, so that being able to bring some theology teaching to them it's a lot cheaper to bring us bringing it to them than them coming to us.
we both have to probably agree on this fact that Haroon said something to me. He goes, his fiance,
yeah,
they went on the trip, said, you know, because he used to say that God brought you to this country, yeah, and brought you to Trinity College of Florida, and it's a miracle, because now I see where you came from. There's no explanation of how you're here. It's like Jim Contreras is another one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, valedictorian, and he comes from the poorest country, the poorest countries in the world, and how did he get here? Like, how did this happen, you know?
Gabe from...
Oh, my goodness.
The first time, one of my favorite stories of him, there was a sponsor before Trinity.
Where is he from? What country?
Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
So there was a church in the area that was sponsoring a ministry there and had connected with him. And this kid, this teenager, like, loved God's word and loved to serve. And the church was essentially like, we need to get this kid over to America so he can study the Bible and go back and minister. When he gets to the airport, his English still isn't good yet. He gets to the airport and he like points to the ground. He's like, "What is this?" And they're like, "Ground? No, no, no. What is this? This? A floor? What?" He's like, "No, this carpet." He said, "Carpet. I've heard of carpet. I've never seen carpet."
Wow.
He never saw the carpet before. He lived in a little village and he'd never seen carpet before. He knew the word. He just had never actually physically seen a carpet. It was fuzzy to him. He didn't know it was fuzzy.
You know.
And I'm like, and holy
these guys,
cow.
And these guys.
And then he's here at Trinity 2 years later.
You know, the irony of this is these guys that come here are the most faithful to the word of God. Haroon. One thing about Gabe is that Stephen Myers will do some apologetics.
Yeah.
Quotes of Gabe. You've got swagger when it comes to the gospel. I'm like, that is a compliment right there.
Yeah. He's continuing. He's working on a seminary degree.
Yeah, he's doing amazing.
Jim, I don't even think you know this. You got to interview Jim sometime. You know he's planting a Spanish-speaking church in the Ruskin area now. So he's been going to a little Spanish-speaking church. But now he gets this Bible college degree, and he's kind of looking around. He's like, I actually think I'm actually... But he wasn't even here as a ministry degree program.
No, he
was in psychology, I believe. And so he... Well,
double major.
Yeah, you do double major Bible theology. So now he's... So I've already gotten calls from denomination, basically.
Now you're freaking me out. I'll tell you why. Because I told Jim a year ago, you're called to plant a church, and now you're telling me this.
He's doing it. Yeah, so I already got a call from the district of the denomination that he's going to be planning with, and just like, hey, what's his character like? Is he capable of doing this? And I said, character is an A+. Is he capable? He'll figure it out.
You know,
none of us are really prepared to plant a church, so I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, he's ready. None of us are ready. He is as prepared as anyone to plant a church, is how I'll put it.
Yeah, yeah. I will say, you know, that I nothing but respect for him, but I spent some time with him. He was graduating last year, and he really struck me as someone who truly is focused on what does God really want me to do, and I'm going to be quiet, and I'm going to find out where God's at work, and I'm going to go join in. And that's been him, and it's been Gabe, you know, and certainly Haroon. Haroon is another one that let's. Do you know any student in school that can give you the Christology of Christ better than him? I mean, that doctrine is perfect. Like he's an apologist.
He grew up in a world where everyone was around him was Muslim and didn't believe in the deity of Christ. So he got really good at defending the deity of Christ.
He gave me things in like his second year here that I never even thought of. Yeah. Like, and he brought out facts and, you know, And does it humbly, you know. He's just a great, great. Yeah. Well, no, so we had those trips. Now let's talk about the city we just came back from, which is you came back yesterday.
Yeah, I guess I came back Tuesday night.
Tuesday night, and you guys took the honors program. So let's get a little snapshot. Yeah. What is the honors program?
So honors program is simply just kind of a way at Trinity College to kind of study some things a little deeper, a little more theology, a little more, you know, kind of what we would think of as contemporary theology, like discussing what's going on in the world and things like that. Now, inside of the honors program, we do these things called honors trips, and we take students to biblically significant places around the world. So we've taken students to Israel. That's an obvious one.
Yeah, I just saw a video on social media of you baptizing our friend Wendy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
in the Jordan River.
In the Jordan River. Like, how cool is that?
Yeah. So that's, you know, obviously no place more biblically significant than Israel. We're actually going back summer 2023. So we'll be going back to Israel this upcoming summer. We'll start advertising that soon.
How much do you think that trip would cost?
Don't make me put that on that yet. I want to get it as low as possible.
Well, hold on now. So yeah. It's not just the travel. If you're going to be an honors student, you take a 3-credit-hour course.
Yep. So if they're in the honors program, they actually get discounted trips because they're required as part of the program to go on one of these trips. All right, and so they get discounts. So the value of joining the honors program is you get discounts on these trips.
Where
everyone else has to pay, you know, $3,500. They might be able to do it for $2,500 or whatever it might be.
And well, we're not going to Israel for $2,500 next time.
But yeah, the last time, so I can only say what I did 4 years ago. I was able to do it for $3,500 4 years ago. I would expect our costs to go up a little bit because inflation.
Fuel costs.
I don't know if you've been paying attention. Fuel costs, inflation. So we'll kind of see it. So my goal, we'll see what everything.
More fundraisers. Kind
of is. Yeah. We do some fundraisers. Yeah. We want people to be able to go. And we announce it early enough. Let you do monthly payment plans and some things like that. So we really try to make it usable for people.
How
and even college classes at the end of this. Like,
yeah, you get
you
3 credits.
Think about the, that's how I tell people to look at this. Like if you're going to, you're going to college, you're taking college classes, look at the cost of that. That's expensive. And you're kind of getting that for free in this. And so Trinity College really works with us great of giving us really discounted cost when it comes to enable students to be able to go on honors trips like this.
Well, the one that, you know, when you went to Israel, and then I've looked at the history, some of the places you've went. You've been to Israel.
It was Italy and Greece before that. So that was where we're kind of following the footsteps of Paul. And going to Corinth and Athens and Rome. And so we're kind of studying the life of Paul and the prison epistles and that. Before that, we've gone to England to C.S. Lewis's house and kind of following C.S. Lewis's life from in Oxford. And
there's not Cambridge. 100 people on this trip. There's like 20 people on this trip.
Yeah, small. Israel's always a little bit bigger, but usually they're right about 12 to 15.
Yeah, and not everybody is actually a student either.
Yeah. So we call it friends of the college. So we have sometimes alumni. We have sometimes people that are, you know, just know somebody that's going, and they're like, I want to go, and I want to learn this stuff. And so they don't take the course for, like, college credit, but they're getting all the same teaching, audit. And they get all that same information, and they can read the books if they want to that they're assigned. But we've also, and it started actually, weirdly enough, with people like Jim and Gabe, where we ran in Harun. Well, they were going to run into visa issues if we were going to Israel. They can't go to, like, Harun can't go to Israel. We'll never be able to go to Israel. He's got a Pakistani passport. Jim from Venezuela cannot leave. He cannot leave the America. He will not be able to get back in. It's not about not leaving America. It's about getting back in. He has got a green card. It's very specific. He cannot leave the country without reapplying for that for that green card. So we ran and said, you know what? We need to start doing a couple trips in the United States as well. All right, and so the first thing we did a couple years back, we did a trip to the Creation Museum, the Ark Encounter, and the Bible Museum in Washington, D.C. And so the first two were in Kentucky, and I was in Washington, D.C. Great trip, great information. We called it Foundations of Faith. And so we looked at it from what's our foundations of faith when it comes to like an apologetic of God being the creator. And there is great scientific evidence that God is the creator. And I think even a lot of evidence on that he created the earth relatively recently. And that's where Christians certainly debate. But we, you know, here at Trinity skew on that young earth spectrum. And so we're kind of showing some of these great scientific evidences. Then we go to the Museum of the Bible and we're kind of saying, okay, but where does the foundation of our faith come from? It's not like we can look at creation and look at a sunset. Maybe we can come to the conclusion that there's a creator. But you couldn't come with looking at a sunset and saying, oh, Jesus died on the cross for my sins and rose from the dead. How do we get that information? Is from God's word. And so being able to, what is the foundation? How was God's word formed? How did we get this Bible given to us that we have today? Museum of the Bible does an incredible job of kind of walking through not only how the Bible has affected history, but how it was formed, the contents of the Old and New Testament.
Great trip. And to be able to go to Washington, D.C. Be in that space is really cool stuff. Yeah, I've been there several times. It's very spiritual, actually. Especially when you walk into Lincoln Memorial and you see the scripture on the granite. It's pretty awesome.
Some little cool things to point out there. And so this year kind of had a little bit, we were dealing with a little bit of pandemic issue still. Europe is still, like, I know it kind of feels like things are back.
We were going to go to the Reformation
tour. So our plan was the Reformation tour. So we'd kind of lined up everything for doing the life of Martin Luther and Zwingli and John Calvin. And so we were going to be going to, you know, Wartburg and Strasbourg and Zurich, Switzerland. Really looking forward to places I have not yet been. We had everything kind of lined up, and then just kind of systematically issues of this was going to be closed because the pandemic still, this was going to be, had to have vaccinated for these people. It was like, it's getting complicated. And it kind of like everything whittled down to we got to take another year off from doing that trip. And so still kind of Europe is still shut down a little bit more than America is on some of that stuff. So we kind of had to readjust, and we made the decision in the beginning of this year, hey, we're going to kind of pivot. And we took basically the next chapter. And if we look at how did Protestantism come around, we then shifted it to evangelicalism. So we looked at evangelical movements in America. All right. And so what has been shaping American evangelicalism, like the idea of the gospel being central to the church.
Sure.
And where the hub of that, so many roads led us to Chicago. And the reason for that is a couple things. One of the first famous evangelists in the world, Billy Sunday, an evangelist that played for the Chicago White Stockings back in the early 1900s. We have D.L. Moody. D.L. Moody grew up in the Boston area, but then as he started doing ministry, he got brought over to Chicago during the Second Great Awakening. And what is kind of spurred on in New York and those kind of New York prayer meetings, what as it began to go westward to what was kind of the westernmost part of the United States at that time in the mid-1800s, in Chicago, here's D.L. Moody doing, you know, children's ministry. He did some radical things. Back in the day, if you went to, like, many Protestant churches, you had to pay what they call a pew tax.
Yeah.
Meaning you had to pay for your seat. And if you didn't have enough money, you had to stand in the back. So the only people sitting in pews were people that had enough money to basically pay their tithe, and it was like a certain amount. D.L. Moody's like, no, I'm grabbing the poor kids in the poorest of neighborhoods, bringing them to church, and they're not paying. And when he got pushed back from his church, he's like, I'll start my own church. And so he starts his own church, and it blows up. And he's like, all right, I need a place to educate these. So he starts his own school, and it blows up. And then he starts doing, like, crusades all over the United States and all of thousands of people. So when you fast forward a little bit to Billy Graham, where our connection comes in. So here's Billy Graham. He states, what are you modeling your ministry after, D.L. Moody? I'm modeling it after Moody. He went to places all around the United States preaching a message of the gospel only. I don't have a particular bent on certain theological positions. I'm not there to nitpick churches. I'm there to bring the gospel and fill the churches.
Fantastic.
And so he stated that, you know, there's a quote that's actually attributed. This is we met with several people who were talking about the history of Moody, and there's a quote that's oftentimes attributed to Billy Graham, but he is quoting D.L. Moody when he says, hey, one day you're going to hear that, you know, Billy died. Don't believe him. I'll be as alive as I ever was in heaven. That was the D.L. Moody quote. He says, one day you're going to hear.
I actually read his autobiography. Moody and Graham. I saw it in both.
Yeah. And he's perfect. Yeah. And then, you know, when you look at the road, so after Billy Graham graduated from what was called Florida Bible Institute, Trinity College of Florida.
1940.
So then he went to Wheaton College to get a degree in anthropology.
Which is a sister school of Moody, really.
Yeah, there's a, they have some different history. So at this particular time, so this is in the 1940s, you know, they're what Moody is for, their focus was Bible college, Bible education. Right. Wheaton is part of this movement of evangelical schools that's saying, hey, we need Christian lawyers. We need Christian doctors. We need Christian businessmen. So Wheaton comes in to say, our job is not to just train pastors. Moody's doing that. We need to train everybody else.
Right.
And so you can see here, Billy kind of gets his degree in Bible from a Bible college, us, and then says, well, I want to continue my studies, and he picks anthropology. He says, I want to understand people. And so he goes and what he I don't think he even knew at the time, am I going to go all over the world? But that's what helped him. He understood people from diverse cultures around the world. So now when he brings the gospel to South America, to Africa, to Asia, I took a picture of him preaching the largest revival in the history of the world.
Yeah.
In Seoul, Korea, 1988, 1.1 million
in one spot.
This isn't on the radio. We're not talking radio. We're not talking television. We are talking in person, 1.1 million people. So I mean, we can say that, did Billy Graham share the gospel with more people than the Apostle Paul? Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, at one time he did. Like, he talked to more, he shared the gospel with more people in Seoul, South Korea on that one day in 1988 than the Apostle Paul did in his whole ministry. Again, not to mention the Apostle Paul. He's doing the foundational stuff. Yeah. But it just starts saying, like, man, Billy Graham is Mount Rushmore stuff. And so we get to, you know, this isn't clear, but Wheaton is literally just outside the city of Chicago. It's a train.
Sure,
train.
Yeah.
It took about a 30-minute train to get to Wheaton. And so they have this Billy Graham Museum there, and really great museum. On a lot of little artifacts and little history of not only all evangelical movements from the very foundations of America to then, Billy Graham himself, and so...
And there's an artifact there that you saw.
Yeah, I saw his actual diploma.
From us.
From Florida Bible Institute. Got a picture of it.
It's not fair. I shouldn't have it. We should
have it. I'm definitely planning an Oceans 11. I think we're on Oceans 14 now, so... I want an Ocean's 14. I'm going to collect 14 people to do a heist. I need a computer hacker. I need an explosives expert.
We're just kidding.
Oh, yeah. They're going to see this. Yes. This is 100% a joke.
But the, interestingly enough, though, in our vault right now is Billy Graham's papers and the things that he wrote. Yeah. It's in our vault. So, cool. But they have his degree, but that would be the Graham family. And which we know. His grandson came here and did a... honorarium a few years ago, and honorary graduate, which is kind of cool. Now, what's the impact of that on a student when they go to these? And you had some students that are coming in the fall that were not even here
so
yet.
So what a cool, it was a cool mix of students. So I had a couple Quest students. I had a couple graduate,
which is a degree completion students.
So a couple adult degree completion students. I had a couple day students, just kind of traditional day program students. I had a couple dual enrolled students. So they're still in high school, over 16 years old, that we allow them, as long as they're dual enrolled eligible, they can dual enroll at Trinity College in the summer on a summer trip. So they earn 3 college credits. And it'll be high school credits for their high school as well.
Right.
So they can get high school credits. It comes over as a history credit in high school. It comes over as, it can be a history degree or a theology degree on honor programs, classes. So, talking about a leg up, what a cool thing for them. And we had a couple graduates. We had a couple professors. So really like a good cross-section of everything at Trinity on one trip. The value of, if I were to sit down and teach you about D.L. Moody or teach you about Billy Graham or talk about church planting, complications in the 21st century. I don't know how much you're really walking away remembering that. However, when I pull you out of your normal routine and put you in the chapel that it's rebuilt because of the fire in 1917, but I put you in the chapel that that D.L. Moody was preaching in, and I let you see the building, the campus that Billy Graham was studying. And I take you to all these places in the city. Now there's smells and there's sights that are now seared into your brain as you're learning this stuff. There's new connection points. So now whenever you, and maybe parts of Chicago don't actually smell well, but you're going to smell little smells. You're going to be like, oh, you know what, Bill? D.L. Moody ministered to kids that smelled like that.
Yeah,
now there's this visceral connection. Now I'm taking you to see. You're standing where they stood. You're seeing what they saw. You are where they were. Now learning this information is a much better chance of getting sealed in. All right, and so that's why I like taking people on trips like this. Let's not learn about Billy. Let's go walk where Billy walked.
Yeah, there's no question that when you go to the Holy Land, it makes a difference. But there is a lot of history in America that's so important. I know it sounds crazy, but I went back to the church of my family, our first ancestry on American soil in 1680 when it was in America, in New York, and they established a church there. It was built, actually, it was burned off. First one burned down, Indians, but the second one was, they built it in stone. It was like, I think it was dedicated in like 1720. I went to that church and I was there and realized that my ancestors are buried in that graveyard, and I could read what scriptures in the logbook of the church, what pastor was preached for their weddings and baptisms, and I was able to read that. It was really impactful.
That takes a line of history, a story, a storyline in history, and intersects it with your life story.
Yeah, that's exactly what it does.
And now you have an intersection point. You know, it's not just history. History's long ago. What does it have to do with me? You literally now intersected something in the past that didn't necessarily have anything to do with you, and now it does.
Quite interesting.
And one of the things of this particular trip that I thought was particularly great, and I'm just trying to read students' facial expressions and reactions. So I didn't have – there were a lot of students that aren't planning on going into full-time ministry. They're not planning on being church planners. I know as we were talking to some of these churches and church planning movements, churches, that I'm like, I know my ministry students would like that are studying this as their field of interest. But I got counseling students here, and I got education students. Are they going to connect with these pastors? So I think one thing was really impactful, and this is a little bit of just kind of, if you know what's happening in the evangelical world, we went to this place called Harvest Bible Chapel.
Yes.
And so a couple years ago, there was kind of a big scandal with their pastor that was James McDonald. And he was kind of a big name person, Vertical Church. And if anybody kind of employed in the church realm are going to know, two big churches that are right around the corner from each other, Harvest Bible with James McDonald and Willow Creek with Bill Hybels, are kind of just like well-known names. I know a big podcast that's out there right now is Rise and Fall of Mars Hill Church with Mark Driscoll. James McDonald was happening at the same time as that. There's actually an episode on James McDonald in that podcast. So we're here at this church, and now we're talking to the pastor that replaced this kind of disgraced pastor. This church that had been 12,000, 13,000, 14,000, now is a quarter of that size, and because of the pandemic and other things as well, had like 9 campuses down to 6 campuses. Next pastor comes in, who's this guy? And really what they did is, and he talked to us with the students asking questions for an hour and a half.
That's awesome.
I asked the question in the beginning, and then the students took it from there. What happened here? Why did you do this? What are you doing here? And this pastor, Pastor James, so humble. And you can see, and he actually made a joke about it, they really kind of look for the opposite. Like, they started looking for the opposite. We want someone that's humble, someone that is a little bit self-denigrating, self-deprecating, maybe a better word.
Yeah.
Like, kind of pokes fun at himself. And he says, we need someone that's not going to fall in the realm of, pride. And that he's like, yeah, I'm going to fall on the other side. I can lean towards depression before I can lean towards that. So, and now he's like, I need the support system around me that encourages me to build. But that's what they were looking for. And these students, just listening to the interaction, they love this guy. He gave us all this, what I would think of as like inside baseball. I'm sitting there like, this is such good stuff. And I'm like, do they know that? And the students, even if they didn't get that all that he said was really profound, and maybe why it was profound, they knew that it was profound.
Sure.
They walked away saying, like, I loved meeting with him. And he was so honest and genuine. I'm like, I know, I would never admit some of the things he's admitting to and some of his struggles that he's having as a pastor.
Right.
And he was just so real, so raw. He showed us around the church, showed all the ministry. Same thing with, Willow Creek. That can be, it's easy to kind of poke fun at mega churches. And they're a mega church. They are the mega of all mega. When we parked on one side of the building, and when I say one side, I mean the wrong side. And so we had to go in the building and walk to the completely other side. So just, there's three levels to this church.
Sure.
And we walked from one side to the other. It was a quarter mile walk. So a quarter mile of church building.
Wow.
And there's three levels of that. So just, you can see, like, we're dealing with square miles of building. But, and what would be easy to poke a little, like, I don't agree with this, and I don't agree with that, and I don't like that they do this. Yet, you kind of pull around the corner, and they're like, okay, here's the ministry we have of ministering to widows. Any widow that comes to our church that needs their car fixed gets their car fixed for free. I've seen churches do that, and I love that. You know, some mechanics will volunteer their time. This isn't just some mechanics volunteering their time. They have a four-bay garage.
That's
that
awesome.
A full garage that is staffed every day, volunteered guys that work in car repair, volunteer time. They have a full grocery store that's open 3 days a week that you can come and get all your groceries if you have need. They have lawyers and dentists and doctors, often ophthalmologists, anybody, counseling, of course. Anything you would need, like basically one day a week, each of these offices are open. Like if you have need, if you are in the community in need of this, you can come on, come. So looking at like, all the students kind of walked away with like, yeah, there's some things that small churches can do better than big churches. There's a community, but then there's some things that some big churches can do that some small churches just cannot. And they saw them meeting needs in the community in such a real and tangible way. They loved it. So it's things like that that's going to inspire, I don't know which one, maybe all of them, but it's going to inspire one of them to say, when they get to their church and actually have some say in their church in the coming years, one of them is going to start a grocery ministry, a lawyer's consultation service, a car repair service. One of them is going to start something that they saw there at that church because it impacted them, and they're going to start it in their church. But you can't. You can't start, not see, can't inspire scripture, but you're more likely to start a ministry at church that you saw somewhere else. You saw it somewhere and that impacted you, and you're going to start it. So it's that inception of that idea that is now in their heads. They're going to bring that with them the rest of their life.
You know, it's such a value than just, okay, we're going to go on a cool trip.
Yeah.
In my college abroad. Yeah. My study abroad. You know,
and we do cool stuff. We do the touristy things around the edges.
It is a study abroad. Yeah. But it's way more deeper than that. It's where can you go study abroad and have your faith strengthened, maybe shook a little bit, maybe really focus on something. I mean, I keep going back as a student that went to Africa, and they'll go back for the internship. I mean, I know that student. I never put two and two together until, like, she's going to do what? Oh, okay. Now she's way more passionate about ministry and what she wants to do, and she sees. You know, one of the things I notice with our students, and you probably agree with this, is that, well, as we kind of wrap this up, is one of the things I notice about our students that when they go out and do ministry and they see a need in the ministry, all of a sudden they're passionate about that ministry. And, you know, you can't just academically get that, or just, you have to actually experience it. And that's why the real value of the Honors Program.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's what Trinity does, and I think it's what the Honors Program does really well, is we're taking those people from observers to leaders. And that is kind of the transition of life. I attend my church, so I lead my church.
Yeah.
And that transition gets to happen over a couple of years, that I'm now a leader in my church. I'm now the minister. I'm not looking to be ministered to. I'm looking to minister.
Yeah,
and there's that transition that happens while you're here.
One of the things, and I know you know this is true, and I'm going to bring this up for a reason, is that we get a call all the time. Hey, do you have any students? We have an internship available at in our ministry or church or whatever it is, and they're kind of shocked that we don't have anyone to send it to them.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, the truth is, they're already serving in a church or in their own church. When they came to school here, especially if they live locally, but if they don't, they're already serving somewhere. If they're a Trinity, there is no students that are here that aren't serving somewhere already because they have to do Christian service as part of their program. So it's kind of like churches are kind of shocked sometimes. Like, what do you mean you don't have anybody who can play piano? I'm like, if you're a piano player at Trinity College of Florida, you're pretty decent. You already had day one. You are already working somewhere. And then I tell pastors all the time, if you want some internships, send me some students. and we'll train them up and we'll send them back to you. And I said all the time, the pastor's like, you want some internship? Yeah. Send me some students, pastor. And then we'll send them back to you. And they go, and I had one pastor go, that's actually a really good idea. I go, and you can do this thing called church matching grant. And the student can come to school here and we'll match what you give, you know? And so it's pretty amazing.
And that's why I look at like, okay, we're here in the Tampa Bay area. If a student from here is saying they're going to go to Moody, I think it's great. I think Moody's great. I think really positively of Moody.
Here's the problem for the church. I have half my undergraduate at Moody.
There is not a negative word I'm going to say. I think they're great. And here's the only problem. But if you're a church here in Tampa Bay and you send them to Trinity College, now they get to intern with you. Now they get to work in your Sunday school program. Now they get to, like, now they don't actually have to leave your ministry
to learn again.
And grow.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is we want you to keep your student. We're not taking your student. You're keeping your student. We're training them. We're going to fast forward, like, and I agree, like, if they stay in your church for the next 20 years, they can learn everything that we're going to teach them. We can do it in 4.
we can do it faster. I mean, your evangelism class alone, your world religions class at U-Church, my daughter's taking those classes with you as her professor, and great impact on her on those two classes. World religions class, her and I had many discussions about world religions, and then, you know, the evangelism class, she led someone to Christ as a friend of hers in Arkansas, and because she applied as a lesson you're using.
There is a secret thing of like, okay, I get to look at them and say, you're now trained to do this. Oh, okay. That there's such a fear of like sharing your faith is such a good example. There's such a fear that all the little programs that are out there, some great ones, Evangelism Explosion and Faith and different denominations have their own little acronym for different evangelism training. But I'll tell you what they all do. Yes, they teach you to share the gospel a little bit. But really, it's that quote-unquote certificate at the end that says, okay, well, now I'm trained, and I'm not scared to do it.
Yeah.
I
know what to do. It does give you a little bit of confidence.
There's a confidence now in,
well, study to show thyself approved.
Yeah. And so that's what we can do here. That's what I can do is I can let them know I'm going to let them practice in a safe environment. I'm going to practice on each other. I'm going to go and stretch them a little bit and actually share the gospel with some people in some kind of low-stakes environments. And now when it comes to, like, yeah, my friend is asking me these questions. I'm not going to miss this opportunity passing by. I'm going to share the gospel.
Well, we're going way longer than I wanted to go, but I have to say something. I wanted your comment on this. We'll end with this today, actually. And it's such good. All this is such great stuff, especially, you know, you giving a great testimony, witness of what's happening in this program, right? And with the students. And you're doing it with the actual students. We're testifying about real people here. And I think Gen Z gets a bad rap a lot of times from the next generation or older generation sometimes. And I've watched some of our students that are, you know, Gen Z, that age group, and they've gone through a global pandemic. They're going through a war. Now we've got multiple wars going on in the world. And, you know, my daughter has never lived without there being a war going on. She's 17. And all of the media things, it's gotten very volatile out there in the world, you know, politically. It wasn't that long ago. It wasn't this volatile. It's really volatile now. It's really amazing how terrible it really is. And I think just looking at what's going on in the world, I look at our students that are Gen Z, and they're on fire for God. They are pushing through. They take stands for truth and what's right, and I look at the ones who just got married. Like, you know, we always have a couple every year, right? They met several years ago, they do the 4 years, and then they get married. You know, I think of a couple of them right now. Just got married. One got a job, you know, at a school, and you know. But anyway, they really are, in my mind, they're still what we use the word psychographic. Of a 1940 graduate of Trinity College, which would have been the Florida Bible Institute, they still get it. I'm training for ministry. My life is a ministry. I'm going to serve God wherever He calls me. And they, you know, they're waiting to get married. They're doing the things right, and they're going against the tide of what the worldliness is going on right now, and the culture is just terrible. I have to give these kids credit and say, you guys are way tougher than my generation. You are way braver. You have way more courage. Well, and I gotta say, I'm impressed. What is your take on Gen Z?
Yeah, my take, and I can tie it right into what we were just talking about in the Chicago trip of studying evangelical movements in America. D.L. Moody is criticized for using this stupid radio, medium. Like, what? No. Get into a church pulpit and preach. Don't be wasting all this time preaching on the radio airwaves.
Right.
And now Moody Radio is, certainly was one of the pieces of revolutionizing that medium.
Sure.
And when we shift, when we shift generations, it's easy for, my generation was looked down upon for just sitting in front of the TV all day because I grew up in the 80s and 90s. I'm watching MTV all day. Now, when I was your age, I had three channels and it wasn't even on during the day. And I'm like, yeah, I got 300 channels. Yeah, I got 300 channels and it's interesting. And they're marketing stuff to me as a kid for the first time in history. So we were, my generation is looked at for being in front of the TV. And now we look at these generations, they're just on their phones all day. They're living in their phones. They're missing the world around us. And I say, no, they're using a new medium. They're communicating in their way. These kids that we have are going to share the gospel in ways on Minecraft and TikTok and in ways that I wouldn't even be able to figure out how to do. I don't even know what to do with that stuff.
Yeah.
They're going to be bringing the gospel to billions of people through that medium. And the medium will change in the next generation. And Gen Zers are going to look down on whatever comes after Z. I don't know what happens next. Whatever happens next, they're going to look at, those kids are all stupid. They all do this all day. We always view the generation that has new technology and new interests, we always view them as dumber or
inferior
is a good word. Yeah. Inferior to us. I look at these guys like we call it contextualization. They are contextualizing the truth of the gospel that doesn't change, has never changed, never will change when it's the true gospel. Hasn't changed in, thousands of years and it won't change. But they're contextualizing it for new environments. They're bringing it into new places and the new spaces, communicating in new ways that there's a Jack Wortson quote from More Life. He says, every person is responsible to reach their generation with the gospel. And I think maybe a better word to generation would be like those that are, whatever technology is the top technology of your day, you are responsible to figure out how to share the gospel with that medium. So I put it on these Gen Zers. Whatever your community is, you're a gamer on Minecraft, you better figure out how to share the gospel with your
I am seeing young people that know the Bible doing TikTok videos about answering questions because there's a lot of false teaching out there, right?
Yeah.
But I am seeing some things come along that pretty impressive, really.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be more pleased with the students that just graduated, the crew we just graduated, and I watch them, last 3 years I've watched kids walk across the stage and get a diploma, and I just think, man, they really have overcome some serious obstacles to get where they are. And even some of the older folks, they have done it.
Yeah.
We've had a pastor just did the Quest program, just graduated, Steve Gearhart.
Yep.
And I mean, he's like in a front lines of the world in Hudson, Florida.
Yeah.
And feeding people and caring people and just, through the global pandemic and all the trials that they're going through up there on that, and here he is getting great grades at Trinity College of Florida.
And he's a good example. There's a term that we use in education that of like, why are certain students coming to us? And one of the reasons that people would come to us is what we call credentialing. That here's a guy that is a great pastor, very knowledgeable, very self-studied.
He went the word of Bible to get the certificate program, right? Yep,
correct. Yeah. And so, but he didn't have this BA. And so when he starts looking at, hey, I'm maybe looking for some additional ways to advance in ministry, to grow my ministry, to get some opportunities, to get foot in the door in some new ways, and we come along and credential you. In the sense of, maybe he didn't, if we actually took the totality of what he learned from the Bible, maybe not as much as others would, because he was really well studied himself. He studied the Bible well on his own and had people disciple him and other things like that. But we get to come along and credential him. Now it's easy to see, well, does he know his Bible? Oh, he's got a Bible theology degree from Trinity College and a Christian ministry degree. So we call that credentialing, that he needs that to get his foot in the door into some conferences. Maybe there's like, again, there's some council that's like, hey, we're looking, you know, for several pastors, and, you know, they're interviewing people, and he doesn't have a BA. And he, you know, he's, his resume gets pushed to the side. We get to come in and credential and kind of show like, oh, no, no, he does know what he's talking about.
Okay.
Okay. And so that's the value. It's not just purely, well, what am I going to learn? Well, if you haven't really studied the Bible on your own, you're going to learn a lot.
Yeah, there's a value to that.
If you learn the Bible a lot, what you're going to be able to do, you're going to be able to discuss some things. There always are going to be those classes that my classes always tend to skew towards. I'm going to ask you some questions that you haven't thought about how to apply the Bible in this really difficult way. And so everybody's coming back to the table like, ooh, I haven't thought about how to deal with that ministry. Okay, thanks, you know. But we get the credential. At the end of the day, now he's got the stamp of approval. And I think it'll get them in some doors that maybe would have been a little closed off before. And so
that's another value of training, for sure. I love seeing, you know, the graduation is always fun because you see the young and you see the old and they all walk across the stage, the same stage, you get their diplomas. And some of these people, you know, I always think, why would someone that age go out and get a degree? And then I realize that the impact, they have a bigger impact in their world. Maybe it's, you know, lady was 70 years old, was she last year? I forget.
Yeah, she was like the longest gap between starting Trinity and finishing Trinity. It was like, it was like 38 years or something.
Yeah, it's like, and then, but you know, she just made like everybody else have no excuses. Yeah. You know, I mean, really, but I just love that. Well, I would appreciate our time together, Joe. Yeah. You and I always have a good conversation, and, you know, the ministry department is, you know, Bible and theology with Dr. Parsons, but the ministry, Christian ministry degrees, youth ministry, you know, pastoral, and those are really, you know, that worship, that is really the heart of the school. And
I always call it, these are the communication degrees. We're all learning the Bible, and we're learning how to communicate it.
Yeah, that's really what it is, and it really is a communication degree. And, you know, I always really appreciate what I see students doing. And when I was on the road for a few years, recruiting, I would run the churches, and I wouldn't know that that pastor is a graduate of Trinity College. I wouldn't even know it. That didn't happen like two or three times. It happened like 50 times to me. And there's so many people that are around the Bay Area, you know, in Central Florida that were equipped here. And other places, you know, as I reach out with alumni, I find alumni all over the world. But your department's such a good department, and you always have an open door policy, and you obviously love your students, and they love you back. They definitely respect what you've done, and I hope people listen today. I hope someone says, I want to go on a honors trip, or maybe I'm not going to be in the honors program. I just want to go on a trip, you know, or maybe I want to write a check and say I want to send some people to places to be inspired. You know, we always, you know, we're a Bible college and nobody gives us money except for people who love Jesus and want to, you know, train up the next generation. That's it. We don't get free government money. We don't get state money like other schools do. We don't get those things. You know, and our students have to pay their own bills. So, but we really appreciate the degree, appreciate your time. And anything lastly you'd like to say before we end this?
Nope, I'll come back on and I'll share upcoming trips coming up. And just as you said, how they can get involved.
Well, this has been the Trinity College of Florida podcast. I'm John Keller, the brand ambassador and the Quest coordinator, along with Dr. Joe Alotta, the department head for our ministry degrees, and about 10 other things that he does here. Feel free to go on our website, hit the faculty page, and if you want to send Joe an email, his contact information is on there. God calls, we equip, and you advance.